Ephesians chapter 5 again tonight. I've had some suggestions for my poem. There's a couple of folks that gave suggestions about the word hateful. They think I should change that word to something else, to ornery or irritable. They thought that would be better. I haven't tried to plug it in. I don't know how it would change the rhyme of things. But anyway, maybe on the second edition we'll change that word, okay? But this morning, just for a quick review, we were looking at the consecrated husband. We were looking at his affection of love. And we saw that his affection of love is, first of all, it is commanded. And we saw that it's commanded because of it is the consummation of the law, love. Then we saw that it's the crown of all virtues. Then we saw it is the very Christian's testimony. Then we saw, number two, that his affection of love is compared. It's compared to four things. We saw, first of all, to the sacrifice of Christ. Number two, to the sanctifying of Christ. To the self-love of ourself. And then number four, to the sustaining love of Christ. Tonight, I want you in Ephesians chapter 5, and I want us to look at verse number 18. We looked at this verse some weeks ago, but anyway, again, and be not drunk with wine, wherein it's excess, but be filled with the Spirit. Of course, the word filled here carries the idea of being in control. Or being under control. The first point I want you to see tonight, as far as the affection of love, this morning again now, it is commanded and it is compared. But here tonight, the two points I want to give you tonight simply is to be or should be, is my points. Should be what? Here, number three tonight, should be controlled. The affection of love, our love as husbands to our wives, should be controlled. You say, what you talking about? Well, there's going to be at least five areas I want us to think of when it comes to how our love should be controlled. Here in verse number 18, and I read the verse this morning, so I won't turn back to it tonight in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 22 and 23, where there it talked about the fruit of the Spirit, and the fruit of the Spirit will only be true in our lives when we are controlled by the Spirit of God. So the first thought that I want us to think about, that how our love should be controlled, it should be controlled by the indwelling control of the Spirit of God. The indwelling. Now, if we really want to love our wife properly, wouldn't we want it to be under God's direction? Wouldn't we want to make sure that we're doing it right? And the only way that we can guarantee that we're getting it right is when we're submitted to the leadership of the Spirit of God on a regular, continuous basis. And then the way we love our mate will be godlike, not from the way we're thinking. And see, our thinking as men, as I pointed out this morning, might mean that we are trying to love our wives, but we're loving our wives the way a man would see fit to love and not the way God would have us to, nor the way that the wife would want us to. By the way, I think I have three women that have turned in my question I asked you this morning. Let me ask it again. Any of you wives would like to give me information on what your husband does that makes you feel the most? Maybe I should ask it this way. What you want your husband to do that would make you feel the love the most? Any way you want to give that to me, I'd appreciate you giving it, and I thank the three that have already given it to me. But back to this, our love should be, our affection should be controlled by the indwelling Spirit of God if we're going to do it properly. Turn with me now to 1 John chapter number 4. 1 John chapter number 4. I'm also going to stop at 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 on the way back, but 1 John chapter number 4, we see the second aspect of this control that our love should be under. So first of all, the indwelling Spirit of God, 1 John chapter number 4, notice verse number 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. Knoweth God. Now turn back to 1 Thessalonians, and I'll give you this second sub-thought when it comes to our love should be controlled. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, notice please verse number 9. But as touching brotherly love, we need not that I write unto you, for For ye yourselves are taught of God to love one another. When it comes to our affection being controlled, number two, not only the indwelling, the control of the Spirit of God, but number two, the informative communication from God. Over in 1 John it says, we know God. Well, how do you know God? You know God because of the information that is communicated to us through this book. Here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, it tells us that God is going to teach us to love each other. How does God teach us to love one another? By all the commands that He gives us in this book about how to love one another. All the places it shows us and tells us how that we're to exercise love. It's an informative communication. Anytime we are informed on something, it should bring more control into our life, shouldn't it? The more information we have on any one subject, we should know more about that subject. We should be able then to perform that, whatever the topic is, in a more effective way. So our affection is going to be controlled by the indwelling, control of the Spirit of God, and number two, by the informative communication that we have from God. It should bring about a control into our loving our wives like we should. Go over to 2 Corinthians, please. 2 Corinthians. We see a third idea here. And there's, let me read another verse to you. You don't have to turn because I'm making you turn a lot through this because I want you to see these verses. But one other verse I want to read to you out of 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. I'll read it to you. Listen, please. Chapter 3, verse 12. And the Lord make you to increase and abound in love toward another, and toward all men, even as we do toward you. Now 2 Corinthians, chapter 5, verse number 14. For the love of Christ constraineth us, because we thus judge, that if one died for all, then we're all dead. And that he died for all, that they which live should not henceforth live unto themselves, but unto him which died for them and rose again. Now here in these two verses, it's the love of Christ, the fact that He would love us enough to die for us and that He'd love us enough to arise and live for us, the fact that He would love us that way, it's that love that constrains us. Over in Thessalonians it said that the Lord make you to increase and to abound. Here we see not only is our affection to be controlled by the indwelling control of the Spirit of God and the informative communication from God, but number three, the intensified constraint of God. Now, you say intensified. Yeah, the word constraineth here in verse number 14, it means, listen to the meaning. It means to occupy someone's attention intensely. It means to provide impulse for activity. It means to hold within the bounds so as to control. Here, it is the love of Christ that holds us within the bounds of so it will bring a control. It is the love of Christ that occupies or should occupy our attention to the so intensely that it causes a control for what? To serve Him, to serve other people. And that's the whole idea here behind the love of Christ constraining us so we go out and serve Christ and love other people as He loved us. And that should bring a control into the way we love our mates. If we're asked to forgive on that same basis, on how He loved us and died to forgive us. Now here, it should bring a control into our life that will help us to love our mates properly, and as Thessalonians said, everyone else as well. But we see here an intensified constraint. Number four, Romans chapter 3. Romans chapter 3. It's Romans chapter 5 and verse 3. Romans 5, verse 3. It says, and not only so, but we glory in tribulation also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope, and hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is spread abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost, which is given unto us. The fourth way in which our affection is to be controlled is what I call inflicted conformity. Inflicted conformity. You say, what are you talking about? Here in chapter 5, in these verses, verse 3 through 5 describes outward pressures. The word here that's translated in verse number 3, tribulations, could be understood as inflicted pressure, inflicted tribulation, something that the world, something that people within the world, something that the flesh, the devil brings into our life that God allows. With this coming into our life, it brings a conformity. It changes us. It works in our life. As it says, your tribulation worketh patience or endurance. Endurance, patience, bring us experience. And experience brings hope. And hope makes us where we're not ashamed. Why? Because the love of God is spread abroad in the heart. And as God's love is spread abroad in the heart through inflicted conformity, what is it? This inflicted pressure, what does it do? It conforms us to the image of Christ. And it's through that conformed image of Christ where we then are willing to let the love of Christ work through us. That brings a control in the way we love other people. See, love is not to be without a control. You can, through a lack of control, you can love people the wrong way. You ever seen a young wife whose husband spent more money on her than he should spend because he loved her so much? He went out and bought this and bought that and put them both in debt to the degree that they are going to have trouble getting out of debt. That's love without control. Right? Where you do something over here and neglect some other area and say, well, I love her so much, I'm just going to stay home from work with you today. That's love without control. There's a lot of ways that you can love without control. But our love should be controlled in the ways in which we've looked at so far. If we would allow God to use these ways, it would allow our love to be controlled and channeled in the exact way that God would have our love to be channeled. One more. Well, let's look at one other verse here. But God commended his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Christ, or God's love for us, was controlled. It was controlled in a certain direction, and that direction was to the cross. It was in a holy, righteous manner. His love was controlled. It was not just thrown haphazardly. It wasn't a love, well, yeah, you can come to me any way you want to. No, you're going to come to him by grace through faith, or you'll not come. His love is always in and under a control, and our love should be in and under control. You know, a lot of times because I believe in discipline, I've been, well, you don't love me, do you? No, the fact that I do love you is the reason why I'm applying discipline. So love must have control, and we've seen four ways here in these passages. Since you're in the book of Romans, turn over to chapter 6. It's one page to your right, and let's look at a verse here, and then we'll go to Romans chapter 12. And we'll see our fifth way in which our affection of love is to be controlled. Notice verse number 16. This is a tremendous verse. Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. Now, of course, over in Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2 there, talks about presenting ourselves, our bodies, a living sacrifice. And it goes on in verse number 2 to tell us to not to be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. The last thing that I want us to see when it comes to the control is not only an indwelling control of the Spirit of God, not only the informative communication from God, and not only the intensified constraint of the love of Christ and the inflicted conformity from pressures, but number 5, an individual choice. An individual choice. In verse 16 of chapter 6, it says here, you're going to yield yourself servants to obey. Whoever you yield to, that's whose servant you're going to be. Whether it's to righteousness or whether it's to sin. That is an individual choice. You will never present your bodies to the Lord by accident. It will be a deliberate individual choice. I can't make that choice for you. I wish I could, but I can't do that. You're going to have to willingly, individually make that choice yourself to be a living sacrifice. You're going to have to make the individual choice yourself to stop being conformed to the things of the world. You will have to make the deliberate, willful choice yourself to be transformed in the renewing of your mind. You will have to make the choice to yield yourself as an instrument or a servant to righteousness. You will, and so will I. The same will be true when it comes to the control of love. we have to make the individual choice. Even though God will work in a very specific way in these other four areas that I gave, it's going to come down, all the working that he does is going to still come down to us saying, okay, Lord, I see how you're working. Yes, I'll follow that direction. Yes, I'll submit to your leadership. Yes, I'll obey your word. Yes, these individual pressures, I need to stop and think about what you're doing through these tribulations and things that I'm facing. Yes, Lord, I will. And make that individual choice in order to be controlled by what he is doing, so we then can control the love that we are applying to our mates. It's an individual choice. But our love should be controlled. Before I leave this passage and go to the next, or this point and go to the next point, I want you to go with me to Luke chapter 6. It's just a real intriguing passage that I have not studied as much as I want to, but I want to read it. There's some things here that I think we should read. Chapter 6 of Luke that applied toward this idea. Chapter 6, Luke 6. I begin reading, let me see. Verse 27, but I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you. Now verse 27 and 28 is definitely anti-American. It's definitely anti-hillbilly. I mean, it's anti any group I've ever talked to. You know, you just don't love your enemies. You definitely don't do good to those that hate you. And you definitely don't bless and say good things about those that curse you. And, there's no way you're going to pray for somebody that's just despitefully used you. That is, some people say, who wrote that garbage? You know, that's what some people would think about this passage of Scripture. But this is the teaching of how we're supposed to love. Now, if we're to treat our enemies this way, shouldn't we apply these principles more directly to our wives? Well, absolutely. Let's read on. We'll read on down through verse 35. And unto him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, offer also the other. And him that taketh away thy cloak, forbid not to take thy coat also. Give to every man that asketh of thee, and of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. Now I must admit, I have personally tried to live these verses. I have sure come up losing a whole lot of things because of it. Honestly. I have loaned things to people that I have forgot who I loaned it to. People come ask me, Brother Camp, you have so-and-so? Well, yeah, I do. Go down to the building. Well, it's not in here now. Well, I remember I loaned that to somebody. I, for life of me, can't remember who I loaned it to, and they forgot that I loaned it to them. But you know what? I have more than I ever had in my life. You know why? I think God blesses the obedience of these verses, even when God knows that somebody borrows something from you, it's going to forget it. You know, I'm sure there's young preacher boys going to be all over this country one day, and they're going to pull out a book to study it, and they're going to say, oh, this is Pastor Camp's book I borrowed back when I was taking his class. And I forgot to give it back to him because I put a crimp in the front of my books now. So one of these days down the road, they pull it out and look at it. They're going to get under conviction and mail it back to me. Might be when I die and all my grandkids are going to get my books back. But nonetheless, these verses right here, God will bless you for living these verses. Verse 31. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what think have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. I mean, just the good old boys do that, right? The hillbillies do that. Rednecks do that. You can't even find any group that doesn't do this except maybe Muslims, and they hate each other. Verse 33. And if you do good to them which do good to you, what think have ye? For sinners also do even the same. And if you lend to them of whom you hope to receive, what think have you? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love ye your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again. Now right there, notice that little phrase right there. hoping for nothing again is a definition, in my opinion, of God's love. Hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and you shall be the children of the Highest. For He is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Oh, this is just tremendous here when it comes to the lessons that we need to learn on how to love our wives. Because we wrap in our love so much, men, we wrap in our love with wanting back again, wanting something back, wanting this, wanting that, doing this for that reason. I mean, we even wash the dishes every now and then thinking that we'll put her in a good frame of mind. Right? Wanting nothing again. It's harder to live than it is to read. Much harder to live than it is to read. It's easy to read it. I mean, it is convicting, though. But nonetheless, it's easy to read. But there's a tremendous amount of lessons right here. So first of all, tonight, our affection of love is to be controlled. Second thing that I want us to see, and I'm really not going to spend as much time here as I could, but number four, our affection of love should be characterized. You say, now, your point's not complete, Pastor Camp. Characterized by what? Yeah, characterized by, yes. What is it, and how should it be characterized? It should be characterized by what you say and do, and as much by what you don't say and what you don't do. Right? Turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, I think, gives us a bunch of characteristics in which our love should be known as or known by. Of course, this chapter is known as the love chapter, right? The first three verses shows you how important love is. And then in verse number 4, and this is where we start reading, starts giving us the characteristics whereby our life, our love, should be known. Verse 4, charity suffereth long. And by the way, every one of these things that's listed in verse 4 down through verse number 8, where it says love, charity never faileth. And by the way, this word charity, as I pointed out this morning, is an old English translation from a Latin word, charis, which means an affectionate, tender love. And that's one reason why they used it. It was a more of an agape type of meaning than the word, just simply the word love as we know it today. But here, every place you see the word charity in this passage, it means the agape love that we're told to love our wives with. But here, it says that it is kind. It says it suffers long. It says it envies not. Says that charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. All these things in this verse are present tense applications. These are to continuously be true in our lives as husbands that are loving our wives, and of course as Christians that are to be loving everyone else. But it says it suffereth long here. This word suffereth long is the same word that's translated many places in Scripture as patience. It's translated endures a number of places. What does it mean? It means to endure. It means to suffer long. It means to persevere. It means to remain tranquil while waiting. Now, that's a hard one, to remain tranquil while waiting. It means to bear up under provocation, get this last part of the meaning, without complaint. Now, the definition would have been a whole lot better if those last two words had been left off, wouldn't it? It says, without complaint. It means to wait without demonstrating irritation. That's hard sometimes. It's hard for not only this man, but it's hard for a lot of men. You know, I personally have seen men in this church show or just exhibit irritation toward waiting on their wives. As we'd be waiting around out here, you know, the wife would be talking, the husband would be wanting to go home, and the husband will say, you know, I'm going to the car. I've heard this a number of times from different men. But anyway, And the wife said, I'll be there in a minute. And he goes, now what is that? That's showing irritation, right? That's not exhibiting love that's mentioned here. Guess what? I've been guilty of that. Woody has too. He raised his hand. I didn't say that without him raising his hand. But that's easy to do, isn't it? Sure it is. But here it says we suffer long. We don't lose that patience. We don't harp and we don't nag, but we patiently wait upon our mate. You know what? That is an aspect that God is working through our mate to help develop patience in us. Tribulation worketh patience. Let's go on here. We see the next, it says, and is kind. Kind here, what does this mean? It means that a person is gracious. It means usefulness. It means, it carries the idea of having a good attitude towards serving others. That's what the word means. It means looking for a sweet way, a gentle way of being constructive. All right, many of us don't mind being constructive. Just let me bulldoze ahead to get something done. You know, being gentle and kind and gracious in it is not the American way. You know, going to other countries on mission trips, I mean, it's really interesting to see other countries, how a lot of places on the face of the earth, the people serve with an unbelievable kindness. In America, they serve you and then they hold out their hand expecting a tip for everything. But that here, love is kind. Then it says, love envieth not. Again, all these, every one of these is a present tense verb, every single one of them. A continuous action. It says it envieth not. It means they're not filled with jealousy. It means they're not filled with envy. It means none of that. You know, jealousy has more than just, you know, I'm jealous of what you have. It goes to the point where not only do I'm jealous of what you have or envious of what you have, but I wish you didn't have it. You know, it's one thing to look at somebody and say, somebody has a new car, and you say, boy, I'd like to have that new car. But it's a whole different side of that to say, you know, I wish I had it and I wish they didn't have it. That's what this word carries, the idea, the connotation of here. That type of jealousy. You know, it's me and mine and I don't want anybody else to have it type of idea. Then it goes on. It says it vaunteth not itself. Again, another present tense. It means to heap praise upon oneself. It vaunteth not itself. Does not heap praise upon itself. You know, it's bad when we husbands talk about everything that we do right and talk bad about everything our wife doesn't do right. That's not exercising love. It goes on, it means to behave as a braggart. It means to be boastful. It means to have an anxiousness to impress. Sort of interesting, the basic meaning of the Greek word here means to be a windbag. A windbag. I mean, we'd probably say just a bunch of hot air is the way we would say it, but that's exactly the meaning here in this application. Then it goes on, the last part of verse number 4, is not puffed up. Literally, I mean, it's very first cousin to that last word that we just looked at, but this one carries the idea of having an inflated, puffed up idea about your own importance. You know, I've seen a lot of parents that really facilitate this characteristic in their kids. I mean, when a parent takes the side of their kid in everything, and when the kid cannot do anything wrong, you then as a parent are helping your kid have a puffed up attitude, an over-impressed attitude of his own self. And we as parents don't need to be doing that. We need to be helping our kids have a biblical, proper view of themselves as a sinner saved by God's grace and somebody that is gracious and kind themselves instead of always puffing themselves up and having a conceitedness about themselves. You know, instead of having a big-headed attitude, we're supposed to have a big-hearted attitude. Love is not self-centered. And here we see that. Verse number 5, it goes on. It says, doth not behave itself unseemly. Another present tense application. And this carries the idea of behaving themselves disgracefully or indecently or shamefully. If we love them, I've been around some young husbands where the wife would say, "Hun, you know, I don't like that." And I've heard the husband say that, "You'll get over it." That's right. You hear what he said? He said, "Knothead." Yeah. A young husband that would say that to his wife is a knothead. I mean, if your wife, if something you do disgrates and irritates her, and where she considers it indecent or shameful, by the way, women are going to consider a lot of things shameful that men don't. As I've said before, you know, in here, when we got married, my wife would tell me, "That's uncouth." You know, I didn't know it was uncouth, but she let me know it was. You know, hillbillies don't know a lot of things are uncouth, but anyway, and this is the idea, does not behave yourself unseemly. And there's been a lot of things that I've changed that I really didn't see anything wrong with, simply because she did. Just because she did. Verse 5, "But doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own." This word means to request or to demand or to devote, get this, to devote serious effort for one's own desire. I mean, this one carries the idea of not only requesting it and demanding something maybe of your wife, but you sitting and devoting serious effort to make sure that you get what you want. Biblical love does not do that. You know, it's hard. It's hard to sit and wait on the Lord to give you what He wants you to have, isn't it? Oh, it's much easier humanly to just start making plans and scheming and working in order to get what you want. Here, seeketh not its own. Verse number 7 again. Is not easily provoked. Again, to cause, get this now, to cause a state of inner irritation. Now, it's one thing to get irritated when you're not planning it. It's another thing to sit down and think about and plan to get irritated. You know, as one old man I heard one time said, "You know, I'll fight at the drop of the hat, and sometime I'll drop the hat." Some people are like that when it comes to irritated. They just enjoy being irritated. They enjoy being upset. They enjoy exhibiting anger. They enjoy biting somebody's head off. I've got a sister like that. I mean, she just revels in chewing somebody out. I mean, really, I don't think her day's not made until she, you know, lets somebody have it somehow or the other. But not easily provoked. Then it says, thinketh no evil. The word thinketh here means, is another present tense, it means let one's mind dwell on something. It's a word that carries the idea of calculating, adding up. It's a Greek word that means keeping a ledger. Keeping a ledger. Sort of interesting. Let's come back to this. Verse number 6. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. The word rejoice here is another present. It means to be happy, glad, or rejoicing. In other words, you do not rejoice in iniquity, anything that's, literally the word is unrighteous. It does never rejoice in anything that's unrighteous, only that which is right. It goes on. But, contrary-wise, it does rejoice in the truth or anything that is truthful. That's what love rejoices in. Now, listen, this gets down there so that when you and your wife, you've had an argument, and as Jerry was talking in Sunday school this morning about, you ever lie to your wife? You know, this type of thing. You don't rejoice in telling a lie. You're going to tell the truth even if it puts you in a bad situation where your wife, quotes, wins the argument. And by the way, as we pointed out when we were talking about communication, an argument or disagreement is, quote, not to be won or lost. That's not the idea that we should have when we have a disagreement. It should be settled, but settled according to truth. And here, it rejoices not in iniquity, but it does rejoice in truth. Then it goes on here, it says, beareth all things. Another present tense. It means to keep confidential. That's what it means. It means to bear it. It means to, in other words, to keep it. It means to hide it by covering it. Listen, how many times have things happened when the whole situation would have been a whole lot better if we men would just... It carries the idea of atonement. If we would just take what was done and just cover it. Not bring it up, not throw it at our wife. Say, as my poem said, say she's been hateful in short. Just take it and cover it. Love does cover a multitude of sins. Instead of thinking, well, we have to tell her she was hateful. We need to tell her that she was irritable. No, cover it. See how that changes the home. See how that love will create a change in her. But it says she beareth, the love beareth all things. It says believeth all things. Believeth all things? Yes, present tense, trust, or has faith in all things. Then it goes on. Hopeth all things. This is quite an interesting one here. It means to look forward with confidence for something. But then it goes on and it means this, because you are going to do all that you can do in truth to make it come about. Now I want you to get that. Hopeth all things, cares forth, that looks, it, you look forward with confidence because you have determined that you're going to do all you can do to bring it to fulfillment. You know, many times I've done premarital counseling and I've heard this statement, I've done all I'm going to do, I've took all I'm going to take, I can't take it anymore. They don't have hope. They're not willing to live this present tense application right here where it hopeth all things. Why? Why do you have confidence? Because I'm going to do everything I can to bring it about. I'd say that's pretty positive, wouldn't you? There's no negativity in that statement. Endureth all things. Another present tense. It means that, cares the idea of the word, you bear up patiently. You endure it. You persist. You wait it out. It's like some wild animals waiting for supper. They'll sit and wait and wait and wait. Have you ever watched a cat catch a mouse? That cat will sit there and the only thing that moves is its tail. You know? He just wait until he can grab. A lot of animals like that. They just sit and wait and wait and wait and wait. We don't have that kind of endurance. We're determination, grit, where we're willing to wait it out. Just sit there and hold out. That's what this idea here means. It carries the idea that a person is not overwhelmed with a difficulty, but he's determined to wait out the hardships. It's a military word that means to withstand an onslaught of an enemy. They come, you stand it out, wait it out. And love's, and this type of love is not going to say, I just can't take it any longer. It's not going to say that. But endureth all things. And then the last one there, charity never faileth. Absolutely no failing in love. Love will be there. Now, our love for our wives, men, should be characterized by these things that we say, these things that we do, these things that we don't say, and these things that we don't do. That's right here in this chapter. Again, these few verses are much easier to read than they are to live. But I guarantee you one thing. They can be lived if we let our love be controlled. Let's pray.